really don't want to screw up the music just by interrupting like that. But anyway, show must go on. Welcome to Evil Avatar Radio, episode number 118 here on 1170 WACV. Of course, music there from Braid. The game that's been making the rounds in the news, as well it should, honestly. It's had a lot of talk here, and we're going to be doing a lot of talk about it. We've got Jonathan Blow, the creator of Braid. He will be on the show tonight with us during this first hour. In fact, he'll be calling in just about 3 minutes or so. We're going to have him on the air. If you'd like to call in, then please do so. 334-272-9228. Send us an email if you want to ask Jonathan anything. Everyone at evilavatarradio.com. Like I said, it's been in the news, and we'll go over this stuff a little bit later on. And we've also got Mo Fwacky from the cross-country super trip. PAX, our month-long celebration of PAX 08 is continuing on in this episode. We'll be talking with Mo coming up in the second hour about what it takes to get a cross-country super trip going. And he'll be taking your questions and telling us all sorts of good PAX stuff coming up a little bit later on as well. Real quick, before Jonathan calls in, let's go around the room real quick and see what everybody's been playing. Jeremy, we'll start with you.
Sam and Max Season 2, which I've absolutely loved.
What so episode far. Are you on right now?
I finished Episode 1. I haven't started Episode 2 yet.
Pretty big, chunky episodes, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good. Getting your money's worth. Daniel, real quick, what you been playing?
Let's see. I played Depths of Peril. I played the Braid demo. I hadn't had a chance to pick up the full game yet. And then the new Dwarf Fortress version came out on Saturday, so that ate my life after that.
Here it goes again.
Well, you look, updated version. I had to play it.
Yeah. Dennis, what have you been playing?
Played some more Tactics Advance 2. I played the Braid demo. Again, like Daniel, I haven't had a chance to pick up the full version. And played some Lost Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which just keeps getting better and better every time.
Good. Girls in the booth, been playing anything? I know what Dana's going to say. Sam will take you. Well, happy birthday, Sam, by the way.
Thank you. 25. What?
Yeah, it's your birthday.
Which one?
Sam?
No. Which birthday?
one of the old ones.
Thanks, Daniel. I only had time for my Sims, honestly, this week, because I started a new job. So I've been studying and watching the Olympics and sleeping.
Yeah. Dana, go ahead. What have you been playing?
Braid.
She hasn't touched Bad Company.
I haven't. Well, I did a little bit. I played some with
Just
Twitch
to clear your head a little bit, all the puzzles
to take
that
a break,
you. Yeah.
Because you got to take a break and come back. But all Braid all the time. Sadly, I have not.
How many pieces you got now?
47.
You're getting there.
I know. I'm determined not to use other resources to finish, so that's
what,
where
13
I'm at.
Pieces left to go?
Yep.
Man, I can't wait to talk to you about the...
I know, I'm excited.
James, over to you.
Braid, not obviously.
How many pieces? We'll talk about your experience with Braid a little bit later.
How many pieces? What, it was out of 60, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
50.
Okay, good. What else have you been...
sorry.
What else have you been playing other than Braid?
World of Warcraft. Tried to play a little bit of... was going to play a little bit of Soul Calibur 4. Came in the mail and...
You want to tell that story now?
It takes 90 seconds. Not even that much. It takes 30 seconds.
Go for it. It takes a lot longer for us to enjoy it.
I wanted to play it a little bit today, you know, just as like, hey, this came in the mail. I'm going to send it back before 2Human comes because I want to make sure I have a slot open for 2Human to get here. And I was like, I'm going to play some Soul Calibur. So I pulled it out of the sleeve, popped it into the 360, and it was like an unreadable disc. And I was like, this really stinks. This is the first bad disc I've gotten from these people. So I like opened the tray, close it again, still unreadable. Did that for a third time, and I was like, this is horrible. So I was going to take it out, inspect the disc before I put it back in there. And I noticed a PlayStation logo on the disc. I was like, oh, yeah, I ordered this for the PS3. That's why it's not playing in the 360. That makes an awful lot of sense. That was really bright of me. But, yeah, that's about all I've had time for this week. I would like to have played more Braid, but somebody was obsessing over it a little bit in our household.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. One 360.
I know.
Two people that want to play Braid. And if somebody's
playing,
I had
other stuff to do. She's more than welcome to do that.
In other words, and Jonathan's on the phone right now. We're going to get to him in just a second. But in other words, it's like for this game, for you to go in completely free, anytime he's playing it, you, Dana, have to stay as far away as possible so that you don't see, so that you don't hear, so that nothing gets, you know, spoiled for you.
You have to be extremely careful what you see because of what amounts to a spoiler in this game.
Yeah, exactly.
And now that he's passed me, he doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah, but you have to stay away.
Yes, I do. But, I mean, he's been very nice to let me have the...
Can't walk into that room. Hey, honey, you want to say... Oh, my God! Yeah.
No, pretty much when I've been home, he's let me have my braid, and he's stayed on the computer.
Well, the braid talk is about to go into the full form here, because we've got the creator, the developer. This is an honor to talk to this man, because his game is just awesome. Mr. Jonathan Blow is on the line right now. Hey, Jonathan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for a wonderful game, first off.
Well, thank you. It was a hard game to make, I tell you, but now that it's out there and I can see people's reactions to it, it's really worthwhile, you know.
Were you a little bit nervous about the way it was going to get received?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if nervous is the right word, because I knew, for my own tastes, I knew it was a good game. Like, it was the best game that I had ever worked on, for what my opinion of a good game is, right? But you really never know. In fact, I expected that there would be a large number of people out there who were completely uninterested in this game, right? Because it's so different from what most video games are. Like, you start, the first thing you see before you even have gameplay is like a bunch of text, right?
Right.
And all my friends were like, don't do that. Nobody's going to play this game, you know? And, you know, the way it's structured, it doesn't have tutorials, it drops you straight into the game. It's got a very art game feel, and most people, you know, like, ooh, art games, those are those icky things that have bad gameplay and aren't fun. Somehow it has all worked out, and people really like the game. And, you know, I always knew that some people would really like the game, but what I didn't expect was that most people would really like the game. Like, if you look at the reviews, almost all of them are over 90. And that's pretty cool.
It's the highest rated game on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
So far, we never know because there's three good games coming up in the next 3 weeks, right? So that may not last long, but right now, it is the highest rated Xbox Live Arcade game.
There's something to be said for what your game... See, me and Dana were talking about this before the show. A lot of people had asked questions whenever I made the front page post on Evil Avatar about you being on the show. They said, is this going to be a spoiler interview? And I said, no, as much as we can, we're going to keep this completely spoiler-free. However, I need to get your email because I do want to talk to you completely spoiler-filled since I've finished the game. There's a lot of questions I have, a lot of interesting things I'd like to know from your point of view, from who made it. But after going through this game and playing and finishing the game, seriously, for $15, my money's worth... It's hard to explain. I'd have paid a lot more for something like this, for the way.
Yeah, you know, it's a small game in some ways, right? Like, obviously, it's not a big AAA, large production value, $10 million,
yeah.
You know, 100 staff people. But I really tried. Like, I worked on this game for over 3 years, and I wasn't sitting around doing nothing all that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I tried to fill the game with everything that I felt needed to be in there and make it as dense of an experience as possible. So I feel like in some ways it's bigger than a small game, you know? Like, you play a typical Xbox Live game and it's got a certain amount of interesting material in it for you, no matter what it is, whether it's, you know, an action game or a strategy game or a board game. There's just a certain amount of gameplay, like, rules in there that you get used to as you play, and then you feel like you've played it enough. And what I've tried to do for Braid is, like, during that period when you're still playing it, just make that as dense and as intense as I knew how to make it.
Well, World 4 is probably the most unique gameplay mechanic I have ever seen.
Yeah.
I've seen elements of what World 5 does.
Yeah.
And in World 6, even, we've had that sort of element used in games before. And again, I'm trying to be very non-spoilerish on these things, because some people, even the mechanics of the different worlds, people don't want to be spoiled on. But World 4, probably the most unique thing, and I really, really wish I could tell people what that is and how that works, but I don't know how you came up with it. And then on top of coming up with that gameplay, putting a puzzle within it and how to work all that into it. So it takes you 3 years to make this game. I can see why, coming up with those puzzles.
Well, actually, you know, so the first three worlds, 2, 3, and 4,
mm-hmm.
I had the basic gameplay of those all done in the first 2 weeks that I was making the game. So the this is not really a spoiler, but you know, you see in various screenshots, people like to use this level that looks like Donkey Kong, right?
Right, right.
Because
right.
They think it's really funny. So when you see screenshots of the game, that's one of the ones that you see most often.
The level,
that
level, Jumpman, yeah.
Yeah, that level was actually in my original prototype.
I'm like, glad you kept it in there.
2004, you know, or something. A bunch of levels are in there, actually. They're a lot better now, you know, but they were there. And at some point, I've been toying around with the idea of releasing my original prototype, just putting it on the web and letting people play it. It's really horrible in some ways, but it's kind of cool, though, to see how this little, like, zero production value, hard-to-play thing grew up into this final Xbox Live Arcade game, you know?
It's an amazing feat, and it is just, again, this game was not on my radar. Whenever they released that list of Summer of Arcade or whatever, I knew what Geometry Wars 2, Bionic Commando, Castle Crash, I knew all that. Braid, I had not heard a thing about.
I think that's true for most people, you know, and it's not even a title, like the title of the game, right, is not even something that's going to tell you what it is if you don't know what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not called, you know, Space Crusaders or something, where you would think, oh, maybe that's like I fly a spaceship around and blow stuff up. It's got a kind of an enigmatic name, and that's not necessarily helpful when it comes to marketing things in a list like that.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why when the game was about to come out, you know, in the weeks leading up to that, I really had no idea. You know, it was a good probability, for all I could tell, that the game would be released and some people would play it and think it was really awesome, and then it would disappear because hardly anybody knew about it, right? That happens with games all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just glad that that doesn't seem to have happened.
Well, it also, I mean, I'll tell you now, it also had that price point going against it.
That's true. A lot of people, especially on internet forums, were very upset about the price.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the reason that I picked the price, you know, there was a discussion going on between myself and Microsoft about that, and we each have our own reasons. And I originally wanted the game to be 800 points just because everything's 800 points, and I knew that if it wasn't 800 points, a lot of people would be mad. But, you know, I looked at the situation and said, realistically, this game might only sell to a small core of people who are interested in art games, right, or who are interested in time manipulation games. It might, you know, there's a good chance that it won't, because it's not Castle Crashers and because it's not in a franchise like Bionic Commando and Geometry Wars, it might not spread out into people who are looking for high-quality games on Xbox Live Arcade. This isn't going to be the first one that they go pick, right?
Right.
So the extra price was, in some sense, kind of an insurance policy against that, if not that, if only the core audience buys the game, like, I still don't lose too much money. And as it turns out, that wasn't necessarily a problem. So,
I don't think you have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
On top of that, it actually, in this particular case, I'd kind of dispute the notion that the $15 price point was working against you.
Yeah.
I think that it honestly, you know, it showed up at a point in time when everybody's thinking, yeah, well, everything's 800 points. Who does this guy think he is? What is this game supposed to be that it's worth, you know, half again that much? Like, what's going on here? So instead of being at that 800 points price level, you know, it sort of stands out and asserts, rightfully so, well, you know, I think maybe it is worth this much. And I think that that caused a lot of people to take notice of it for different reasons. And I think that's actually worked out really well because it is worth that money. And it sort of, regardless of what the gameplay might be, which it's fantastic, but it also brings up this point of questioning value again. And I think it was a good time to question that because it says, no, this is this thing that I've been working very hard on for this extreme period of time. And, like, you know, yeah, I'm going to push it out there at this higher price point, and I'm going to agree with that. And, you know, that caused a lot of people to take notice of it. So I think that was probably an excellent thing to do.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and at the same time, there probably are, though, people who didn't buy the game, right? I mean, surely there are lots of people who say that there's no way they will ever pay more than $10 for a downloadable game, right? And
yeah.
I lost some people there probably, but gained some people the other way by just having notice on the game. Which one is better, I don't really know. And, you know, actually, I don't care that much.
I was about to say, I don't care what the price was. After just after going through that, man, it was well worth anything. I guess I would have paid. It's all again. After going through this entire game, I've gotten more out of it than most $60 games that I purchase.
Yeah, and a lot of people have told me that, and I'm cool with that. You know, a lot of people also, though, have said, oh, that extra $5 is too much, and I respect that, too. You know, like, if people don't want to pay $15, I'm not mad at them. Like, I'm totally okay with that. But for me, you know, the most important thing was to get the game out into the public and have it be received by a reasonable number of people who are interested in it, you know, and that's happened. So whether I could have sold more at $10, whether I would have sold less, doesn't really matter to me. You know, I'm not, as long as I make enough money to make my next game, which looks like is going to happen, then I'm totally fine with the decision, even if there could have been a better one or even if this one was the best one. You know, you just can't tell, and I'm pretty good with where things are right now, and not going to worry about it.
Well, we've got some questions that some of the community of EVAV would like to ask. These are probably questions that you've already been asked and answered, because you've been popping up all over the place.
Yeah, that's true.
Anytime your game mentions, it's like, boop, there he is. And that's good. I'm glad to see that, because you don't with creators of games. Normally, they have to hide behind the PR wall.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that I really value about being independent, right, is I can just say what I feel like. You know, there isn't somebody from marketing or PR guarding all my words and making sure that I don't say the wrong thing. So,
and we love you for that. We really do. It's again, breath of fresh air for that, as is the game itself.
Isn't that the most infuriating thing, though? Like, you read an interview with somebody who's, like, a vice president at, like, Microsoft or Nintendo, and every answer is an exercise in, like, dodging the question.
Yes.
I hate that. Like, if I ever become that person, I don't know what I'll do.
We've had a few on the show before.
I mean, you can understand that some people have their hands tied, but we really, like, I mean, as a group of individuals, as people who do the show, we really value the ability to say what you think. And if you're not saying what you think, then you're wasting your time, you're wasting your breath.
It's also not respectful of the audience, I think, because you're showing up and you're like, I'm going to answer these questions that you want to know, and in reality, you're not answering them, right? And that's kind of against my philosophy. It's the same thing with Braid, actually. Like, the game is geared toward respecting the audience's, the player's time, and trying to give them as much as they can in that time. And so I just, you know, I wouldn't feel good about coming on air and then not saying anything for half an hour, you know?
Yeah, and, you know,
speaking of which, I'll stop babbling and let's hit the question.
It reminds me, we had the N Plus guys on, well, Guy and Gal, on a few weeks back, who kind of, they weren't hiding behind the PR thing, and they told us what they felt about the way they were handled with Microsoft, and, you know, how it wasn't really pleasing to them, but that they were still happy to have that game out there so that other people can enjoy what they've done. And I'm glad you found an outlet. From what I read somewhere earlier today, that Sony actually passed you up on it.
They did. They were not interested in the game. I don't necessarily blame them, because it didn't look as good as it does now, you know, but all the gameplay was there. So I don't know their reasons, but they didn't want it at the time. We'll see, though, in the future, the game might come to the PS3.
Yeah, well, that would be one of the questions there. But we'll start with the first question here. Can you tell us... Can you tell us a bit about how you got started in the games industry?
It was a long time ago. I was just out of college, and I had been working some job that I didn't really like. It was like a business software company kind of thing. And I said, screw it, I'm going to quit, and I'm going to do game programming. And I just got a consulting job this was the mid-90s, 1995. And there was a company that wanted... They were doing a bunch of stuff for a set-top box, because set-top boxes were the future back then, you know, a little computer that does cable TV and, like, movies on demand and stuff, you know. And so I ended up porting Doom and Doom 2 for this platform. And I was like, that's not too bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I can do this. And so shortly after that, a friend of mine from college, we started a game company, just two of us, and we later on hired an artist. And it was with what meager savings we had, which was not that much back then. And we tried making an online-only multiplayer hover tank game, like 32-player sci-fi combat thing.
Yeah.
In 1996, 1997, over modems, which was, like, not easy. We did it, but the problem back then was that the market for that kind of game, that was, people were saying, oh, this is going to happen, you know. There were a couple companies that were based around, a bunch of people will subscribe to us and get better connections over their modem line and get lower latency so they can play these games, and it didn't really pan out. So we had a really hard time making money back then and went out of business eventually. But in the process of making that game, I learned a lot and became a much better programmer and better designer. And so for a bunch of years after that, I was a consultant. I would go around to companies who needed some emergency work on whatever big AAA game they were doing, and I'd work with them for a month or two each. I was a columnist for Game Developer Magazine, which is an industry publication. I wrote the technical column, so I'd research programming issues, like how do you solve this difficult problem, and write about that every month. And I've spoken at conferences every year forever. Mm-hmm. And just then a few years ago, I decided, okay, it's enough doing all these little consulting gigs and little tiny things. I'm going to do a big project now. Big, right, in quotes, because Braid is not that big, but it's a lot for one person. And so I decided this is my thing I'm going to do, and I sat down and did it. And that's my whole history, actually.
Oh, that's great, though. That's what we wanted to know.
Yeah.
Dark Prince from the Threads wants to know, where did the inspiration for Braid come from?
Well, in terms of coming up with the idea of the game, I just kind of knew what I wanted to do.
How long
like
is that?
Best ideas.
How long has that idea been floating around in your head there?
Since late 2004.
Yeah.
That's when I started the prototype, like December 04.
Well, the prototype, but I was thinking more of the story of.
Oh, that all happened in the first prototype. It had the story, not the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, in the way that you go through the first few worlds and it has that introductory text.
Right.
I had that for three or four worlds back then. It's been heavily revised. And, you know, I didn't have the ending. I had no idea until the game was going to end until about a year later. That idea of the story came from a couple of books that I'd really liked. The main one is a book called Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino, who's a reasonably contemporary writer. He died in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this very experimental style of fiction, and he's really considered one of the great contemporary writers. And Invisible Cities is, you know, I don't want to try and say what it's about, but
it had this
way in which it was a collection of a bunch of 3 to 5 page pieces that were strung together into a bigger story. And each piece explored a fictional city that just worked differently. Like, reality was fundamentally different in each city, and it explored some facet of what that meant in terms of traveling there and visiting, or what it meant for the natives who lived there and things like that. And so it was this exploration of reality by visiting place to place. And just that picture was a big inspiration for me. But you know, I was thinking, instead of doing that kind of thing in a book where you just write things and they're not real, if you want to go place to place where reality is different between places, in a game you really can do that. You can really make the rules different, right? You can change the laws of the universe as you go from place to place. And that was the core idea of the game. And rewinding happened to be the first thing that I tried out because of some discussions I'd had with some friends about how they wished that, you know, more games had done rewind. Like Prince of Persia: Sands of Time had just come out, and people were like, hey, that's kind of cool, but it's, you know, they don't maybe use it as effectively as they could. What if it was unlimited? And I was like, yeah, what if it was unlimited? How would that change the game design, right? How would that make certain things uninteresting? Like, just platform dodging enemies is not that interesting anymore because you always just rewind. So you can't make a game that's based around getting past the enemies, like Super Mario Brothers, right? So how do you make it interesting? And for Braid, my answer was making it a puzzle game, right, instead mm-hmm. of an action platform. And then it evolved from there, you know, over the next year or two, and then the next year and a half after that was just polishing it up and making it as good as it could be.
And it's great. I'll continue to gush about this game for a while, so I hope you don't mind. Dead End wants to know, what came first, the story, the mood, or the gameplay in terms of concepts?
You know, it was all at the same time. That's the thing, is the best ideas just kind of happen. And I don't know where they come from. And they're just there, and they're bigger than I know what they are. Like, this is a hard concept to explain, but if I start out with some simple idea, and then I just start adding little pieces onto it, like, wouldn't it be cool if this, and wouldn't it be cool if that? If I, like, really understand everything about this idea and how it's constructed, and I can write out a list of what's in it and how to make one of your own or something, then it can't really be that deep, right? Like, there's something in Braid that's about, it's about what it means to do things, like anything in the world, and, like, what it means to understand things and to make things. And it's something that I don't try to intellectualize, because the value in it, a lot of the value in it, is the extent to which it's deeper than my conscious understanding, right? Like, a lot of people consider art games to be pretentious, right? Like, oh, some guy's going to come along and he's going to tell me some moral or message or, like, how to feel about a certain thing. And I do feel that if you make art that way, you know, like, my painting is going to make you really sad, right? Or, you know, my book is going to teach you to be nice to people. That is a little bit, it's a little bit being a jerk, you know? It's like, I know better than you, or I have something that you could greatly benefit by hearing, right? And that's not the way that I try to do things, at least not now, right? So what Braid is not, it's not trying to tell people something like a specific, like, moral or message, right? It's more of an exploration in different directions. And I certainly have very specific things that I was exploring, but I'm not trying to tell the player, hey, look at this, because you should be like X, or the world is like Y, because I think that that's a little bit condescending.
Yeah.
It's rather, let's make this space where we can explore and understand a lot of interesting things through exploration, right? And that's one way in which I think that art games can be very meaningful, but also, not condescending and not pretentious.
Yeah, it's, again, I have to be careful about what I say.
Yeah, I'm trying not to go into spoiler territory here.
And it's tough because I want to mention that, that this game does... I haven't yet figured out if it does have a message that it's trying to tell me, or if it's leaving things up for me to decide on my own. I still question that. I go back and I read the text over and over again, and then I read the alt text over and over again. And, there's some great concepts that you're throwing at me. I just got to figure out which one you're trying to let me latch on to. Or if I'm just supposed to make up my own from it. Sometimes I like that, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I want to know, no, what is your intention? What did you want me to experience?
So I do have a very specific intention behind the game. You know, it's not like some people might make art by throwing a bunch of stuff out and say,
figure
it
out yourself.
I'm making grist for your imagination, you know?
Yeah.
That's not really what Braid is. Like, it is trying to provide that. It's trying to provide, you know, a space for people to puzzle through things and to figure things out and to understand things, but there is a meaning behind it that I intend, right? But that's always, like, the nature of art is that the meaning that people get from something is always going to be different from what the artist intended in some way. Sometimes it might be close, and sometimes it might be really far, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, everything in there, in the ending, that's really confusing, means something very specific to me, and there's a very specific reason why it's there. And
I'll have to send you an email.
Totally.
Or I'll just have to call you some other time, and we'll have to have a discussion on it, because I really, really want to talk to you about it. Delinda has a question that says, Braid won a prize at IGF in 2006, but it didn't come out until 2008. What was the game? Was the game basically finished, or did the core change significantly during that time?
It was basically finished in that it had all the same worlds and the same ending. There's an epilogue on the game now that's new, but the climactic level of the game was in there back then. It had programmer art, so it looked really ugly. In fact, when it won this award at the IGF, they were projecting, the nominees up on this big screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had, I don't remember what the other nominees were at the time, but they had really good looking art often and just nice videos. And, like, they had Braid up there, and not only was it total programmer art with, like, ugly sprites and everything, and, like, hardly any animation, but I didn't even, like, my computer wasn't fast enough to capture it in Fraps at, like, 640, so it was, like, 320 by 200, like, blown up to large screen. It was, like, the ugliest thing that you've ever seen. And then they announced that that was the winner, and everybody in the audience was just confused. They were like, which one? Like, what? But yeah, so a lot of what we've been working on is the art. So David Hellman came on, the main artist for the game, after that award was won, and did a lot of work coming up with the visual identity for the game. And there was a lot of work involved in making sure that that didn't interfere with the gameplay, because you would be really surprised. Like, if you start out with a game that just the levels are all rectangular and there are a bunch of blocks and the background is black or whatever, or just blue, it's very clear where the platforms are and where you can stand and how wide the jumps are, you know, and what's foreground and what's background.
Yeah, yeah.
What levels, what items in the level are interactable and what isn't, right? And if you just start throwing art in there, you mess all of that up, right? Things become confusing. Like, even if there's something that's clearly background, if it has a lot of detail to it, like foreground objects, your brain can latch onto that. Like, you're looking at the screen trying to figure out a puzzle, but there's something that keeps drawing your eye over to this place that's not meaningful, right? So a tremendous amount of work went into the things that people don't even think about when they're playing by design, right? Because if they think about them, then they're failing. Then the design is failing, I mean. Mm. So, you know, if you look at the color schemes of the game, you know, these are things that some people have complained about, like, oh, I don't like the background style, it doesn't match with the foreground, but there's a reason for that. You know, it's more distant, it's blurrier, it's a little more impressionistic because it doesn't have gameplay significance, right? The things that have gameplay significance that you can interact with or collide with have higher frequency detail and catch your eye more and things like that. Like, just a bunch of work went into that. A bunch of work went into refining the puzzles, because all the puzzles were there, but some of them were a little more spammy. Some of them weren't as good. A lot of them had extraneous elements, so there was a long process of simplifying things down to, you know, given this level and what is the puzzle that you're trying to figure out, like what is the cool trick to it, then how do we make this level as simple as humanly possible while still keeping that trick? You know, and that's actually, I think, one of the things that people respond to in Braid is they look at a level and they're like, this is completely, there's no way to solve this. There's like, here's my guy, and there's like a block over here that I can stand on, and nothing, and this puzzle piece that I'm trying to get, and like, how do I do that, right?
Right.
And there's a way. And that's one of the things that's cool. Like, a lot of puzzle games are, oh, you have to flip this switch and run over here and go through the door, and then flip this other switch and get the card key, and blah, blah, blah. And they build hard puzzles by making it really complicated. And Braid is about building hard puzzles by making it simple. And part of that is just meditating on things a long time and understanding how to make them simpler and better. So to cut this answer short, a lot of work happened, both in design and art. But yes, it was a complete game, and it could have been released in 2006. But I just saw that it could be better and just kept making it better.
I never realized how absolutely close-minded I was about getting things done until playing some of this game. And Fishbang has been watching me struggle with parts he's already passed. And I love how it makes me realize there's more ways to get this done.
I went through it many, many times. I got through it the first time and had not collected. I think I was up to like 30, I think, maybe 20-some-odd pieces. And then I would just keep going back through and going over and over and over. And every once in a while, this new element would stick out to me saying, oh, I did this back in this one. I can do that here. That's how I get over to whatever, you know?
Well, and regardless of certain things that might require you to sort of double back on your own progress to complete a puzzle, it's an exceptionally cool element that, for the most part, you can just move through the level. Like, okay, here's this puzzle. It kind of makes my brain hurt. I'm going to move on. Okay, I'm just going to keep jumping past this and moving on and moving on. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of flow through each level and decide to tackle each puzzle, for the most part, whether you feel like it or not. And I found myself just sort of cycling through each level and having a different degree of comfort with each puzzle as I came across it. It's like, okay, I'm going to let myself rest on this puzzle now and just not worry about it. And then later I'd come back to it and feel like I was up to the challenge. And it was, I never felt like I was at an absolute block, you know. It was like, well, I can't move forward at all until I, you know, get the third puzzle done. And the third puzzle was pissing me off, so...
Well, that's one of the classic problems with puzzle games, right? Is you can't get any further in the game unless you figure out this one thing that, for all you know, like, the designer picked it totally randomly. Like, you have to be telepathic in the designer's mind. Like, that's one reason that adventure games, you know, like, either text adventures or point-and-click adventures aren't that popular anymore, because they were notorious for that kind of puzzle. But, you know, so one of the things I was trying to do in Braid was give you as much freedom as possible, you know, to explore things at your own rate and to solve things at your own rate, and to not block you from experiencing parts of the game. At the same time, I wanted to have some reward for getting the puzzle pieces, which is why you can't get to the very end unless you've solved them all. But apart from that, yeah, it's go where you want. Have your own play style. You know, some people are extremely completionist and will not leave a level of this game until they've got the pieces on it, you know. And other people will just go walk and pick off the easy ones and come back to the hard ones later, and the game allows everything in between.
Yeah, I'm a completionist for the story of this game. I am not a completionist as far as everything that there is now left to do.
Yeah.
James was talking about puzzles that piss him off. You wait for the rest of the stuff. If you want to go through and do that, there's...
No, I'm aware of what it is.
Yeah, I've watched...
I'm not that.
Yeah, I went ahead and watched the videos on how that was done, and I don't even want to get into your head about how you tried and how you figured out how to do all of this stuff. I'm just going to put this here, and they'll just have to figure out how to get there. Because I couldn't believe... First off, I couldn't believe how people thought to check... How did people figure out, oh, I can go here, you know? I guess it all relates to that whole, you know, you're in a different reality type of thing. Think outside of this reality. Think of, you know, how does anybody think, how did they think to find the warp tunnels in Mario, you know?
I always
Way
wondered
back
that,
when,
you know?
You know? How did people realize that they could go outside of the level that they were being shown?
You know? Someone figured it out, and he told someone, you know, and... There it went from there. So,
a lot of people are asking you, what are the plans for Braid being released on other platforms?
So, I'm doing a PC release as soon as I get it done. My best guess is it'll probably get released in October. And that'll be published through one or more online publishers. You know, I haven't signed with anyone yet, so I can't announce that, but I think...
Right.
People will be reasonably happy with who it is. You know, it's not some horrible giant mega corporation like Electronic Arts or anyone like that. So apart from that, I don't have anything that I know is going to happen. Like I said, PS3 might happen. There's, I have a period of exclusivity that has to expire before
right.
I can do that.
Yeah.
But I may do it, and there have been people at Sony talking to me saying that they might be interested in having the game now. So
we turned it down, but we'd like to have you back.
Well, you know, anything with a big company like that, there's a lot of different groups with a lot of different interests. And what I found was that there was a different group than the one I'd originally been talking to who was interested in the game, and they didn't know about it, and I didn't know about them, you know. So there's that. I was thinking about doing a handheld version, because you would think that for the PSP or something like that, it would be nice to just have a little 2D platformer, you know, that's good mm-hmm. for a handheld.
Yeah.
But so far, you know, I've been thinking about it, and it just seems like there are too many technical problems to do a PSP port that's good. So I might just hold on to that. I might wait until there's a next-gen handheld, which I hope somebody's going to do one of those soon, because it seems like it's been a really long time that the PSP and DS have been out, but I don't actually know about one. So I don't know. If somebody comes along and really wants to port it to the PSP and is willing to put in a ton of work there, then maybe I'll give them the license to do that, as long as I retain, you know, quality oversight and mm-hmm. can make sure that it's good. But that might be a difficult deal to set up. So I don't know. But PC release definitely, PS3 maybe later.
Well, that's good. I mean, it, you know, you've got PC and 360. You're covering a good area there. But you know. Everywhere else would be great as well. Sincefield would like to know what's next for you. Are you going to work on a sequel to Braid, which I read about an answer to that earlier today, or are you going to start from scratch on a new title?
I am starting from scratch on a new game. And the reason is that even though people enjoy Braid a lot, and, you know, the instant reaction to that is, hey, I'd like to play more of this, you know. I don't have any idea for how to make a sequel or a level pack that's as good as the original game, because a lot of the original game is good because of its density and originality and how it doesn't repeat things.
Right.
And it doesn't use things. And, you know, I do have ideas for more puzzles that I didn't use in the original game, and I'm sure I could come up with ones that I haven't thought about yet, but it just wouldn't be the same. It would be like adding on to something that already is complete. You know, I feel like Braid is complete, and it doesn't need anything else. And so even though it seems like this game is going to do pretty well, so it might be a good idea to make money to make an expansion pack or something, but I really don't want to do that. I would rather work on my next game, which is nothing like Braid at all, kind of, except that there's some ways in which it's exactly the same game. So I don't know.
Does it have a title?
You know, it does. It has a working title, but I don't even want to say that because as soon as I say it, I haven't even got the website yet.
Yeah.
As soon as I say it, there's going to be like domain squatters and people trademarking it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's better to keep that stuff secret. But the title doesn't even tell you. There's no way you would guess what it was from the title.
Same thing with Braid. Exactly. What is this about?
Yeah.
Are you targeting the same? You know, are you thinking about the same type of platforms? Like, is the next game? Are you still thinking about something like PSN, Xbox Live, handheld?
For the next game, I don't actually know. I will tell you, it's going to be developed on the PC first, just like with Braid. The PC is a way better development environment than a console, always, because it's just easier to work with. So it's going to be developed on the PC first, and so far, the design that I have, which might change, is mainly driven by the mouse. So.
Okay.
If it stays that way, then you might think, well, maybe on the Wii, or maybe there's that rumored, you know, motion controller for the 360. Maybe if that has a pointer on it, it could work that way. You know, maybe if the PS3 gets that, I don't know. But it's so far out. It's going to be at least 2 years from now when that game is done. And I have no idea what consoles are going to be out 2 years from now, you know, what hardware is going to be out. So I'm going to make the game as good as I can make it and worry about where it'll be released when it gets close to being done, which is how I did Braid, and I'm happy with how that worked.
Well, the PC will always be there for you.
Well, I hope so.
Exactly.
You never know, like, with Vista and the horrible things that are happening there, like, but, yeah.
True.
We can hope.
Delinda also asks, what games do you currently enjoy? I mean, what games are you currently playing?
The game that I've been playing most recently is Everyday Shooter by Jonathan Mack, which is that's available on Steam on the PC,
mm-hmm.
and also on the PlayStation Network, and you know, it's also a small game. I think it costs $10 or something.
Yeah.
And you know, it's an 8-way shooter like Robotron or Geometry Wars, but it's different. You know, each level is like a music album. The game as a whole is like an album, and each level is like a track, and it has actually it's a little. You know, in the same way that Braid goes from world to world and each world is different, you know, each level in Everyday Shooter is totally different and has its own rules that you're trying to figure out. And it's just really fun, and it feels really personal, and that's why I really like it. And I don't have a PS3, so I never got to play it when it came out on the PS3, but it came out on Steam maybe a month ago or something. I've been playing that. I played Geometry Wars 2 a bunch in the past week because, hey, it's a big game on Live Arcade, and you know, it's part of this lineup that they have, these five games that are coming out for the summer, and it's cool. I actually like Everyday Shooter more, but for an 8-way action shooter, Geometry Wars 2 is really good. And I don't know, I play a lot of free indie games. In terms of really big games, you know, I played Call of Duty 4 recently. I thought that was pretty excellent in the way that they, you know, it was a good first-person shooter. With some problems, like they still have that Call of Duty, like sometimes guys respawn and you're supposed to push forward and sometimes you're just supposed to kill everybody and you never know which, right? But if you ignore that problem, it's a really compelling game in the production values, and they did some things, again, not to spoil it for anyone out there who hasn't played Call of Duty 4, but they do some really awesome stuff in that game. There's at least three things that nobody has ever done at all in a first-person shooter, and they do them all very well, and it's great. But I still, you know, I've always been a big first-person shooter fan, and very rarely do games come out that I really like. Like, my favorite shooter is Counter-Strike, and I liked Operation Flashpoint, like that kind of very realistic one-shot, one-kill kind of game.
Well, we've got a little bit of time left, and I wanted to ask you, going back to Braid, The inspiration for the music. One of the other things. There's a ton of things that this game can draw people in with: the gameplay, the story, the art, and then of course one of the first things that hit me when I was playing was the music. Were you a fan of that type or that sound, or I mean, where did it come from?
You know, I have an eclectic taste in music, but I kind of knew what I wanted the mood of Braid to be. And I wanted it to be, you know, it didn't have a simple kind of emotion, right? I wanted Braid to be kind of mixed, right? Like, I wanted it to be happy and sad at the same time. Like, maybe a little bit sad, but with optimism, right? Which is why it's got a very sedate music in the beginning, but then you go into World 2 and it's kind of got this upbeat song. But at the same time, there's something a little off, like the little monsters in the world or look kind of grumpy and unpleasant, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I was aiming for, that kind of ambiguity and ability to go through a lot of range of emotion. And I really like string instruments for that, like cello, violin. So there's a lot of that on the soundtrack. And from there, you know, I just had an idea in my head of what the musical palette should be like. And then I just started listening to a lot of music and found the songs that were right.
Well, it's a wonderful selection. I love the music. I love the game itself. I don't know if I want a sequel or not. It did turn me on to the fact that I do enjoy apparently putting puzzles together using a controller instead of actually having all the pieces out on a table and putting those together. But
it helps that they're small puzzles. You know, they each have 12 pieces, so it's not like you do super repetitive actions over and over.
Yeah. You guys in here, any questions for Jonathan before we go?
Well, I've asked mine.
Yeah?
So.
Jeremy? Daniel? Anybody else? Dana? Anything in there for you?
No, I'm just looking forward to hopefully finishing on my own without help.
He's real big. Have you read the official walkthrough?
I did, but not because I was looking for answers, and I was thoroughly entertained by that, but James can tell you that I'm extremely frustrated because I'm determined to finish it on my own.
Well, that's the most, you know, it feels the best when you do that.
It is so rewarding, and when I've spent a couple days literally on going back to somewhere, and then the third day I went in and figured it out, it was very rewarding, so I thank you for that experience.
You just wait.
I'm sure.
You just wait at how rewarding.
I'm ready.
Again, I have to be careful. let me tell you, the part before the finale, the four places. That was really that again. Another unique concept, like World 4, where I have never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, the funnest thing about developing Braid or the post-developing, like watching the launch and people on forums, you go to some big forum where a lot of people are discussing the game, and it's all spoiler tagged, you know? Like, the posts are, like, all... It looks like redacted government documents or something. It's, like, all in black line because nobody wants to spoil the game, and that's cool. Like, I'm glad that people aren't spoiling it for each other, but it's funny. Well,
we definitely appreciate you coming on with us tonight, and we appreciate you for the game. I'm so glad it's out there, and I'm so glad it's available for people to play. Go ahead.
I would like to comment, it's been said before, about your involvement with the community and your response to people that are talking about your game, and your level of involvement is just amazing, and I really think that's great, and I hope that your time allows you to continue to be involved, but it might not.
Well, hopefully it will, you know, because again, for all I knew, the game was going to completely disappear into nothingness, so... Every time that I read a posting about the game or, like, somebody emailing me or posting on my blog saying, oh, I really like this game, that's all bonus. That's all gravy that was unexpected, you know? So it's cool.
Well, you got quite a few people that love what you've done, and there's plenty of us in here who appreciate it as well. There's a couple of us who haven't gotten around to picking it up yet, but they want to out of what everybody has said, and they want to experience this as well. So... hang on a second. Sam has a question for you.
Actually, it's not a question. It's more of a comment. Like, based on what you said that your inspiration was for this game, I don't know if you're into anime at all, but it sounds very much like something that I think you would love and you should pick up, and it's called Kino's Journey, and it's amazing. And it just, it sounds so much like the inspiration of the book that you were talking about, that if you haven't seen it, I highly suggest you do, because I think it'll kind of touch your heartstrings a little bit, like what you were saying.
You know, I have not seen that, but if you guys want to email that to me, because I can't exactly tell how it's spelled, but yeah, I'll definitely take a look at it. Thank you.
Yeah, she will. It's a wonderful game. We thank you again so much for being on the show. We please come back anytime you want to talk about anything you want to, buddy. You're welcome here. So we'd love to have you back on. And I am definitely going to be talking to you further off the air at some point to talk about this ending. We've got a thread going on at EVAV. We warn people not to go into it. They will do themselves a major disservice by experiencing the ending before experiencing it. It's gotten a lot of conversation. So again, thank you so much. Thanks for all the hard work. Thanks for the years you put into this and pushing to get it out there, even when you've had walls thrown in your face for it. So
yeah. All right. Thank you very much for having me on your show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we enjoyed it as well. Thanks again.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Have a good night. And that was Jonathan Blow, creator of Braid and developer of Braid. Lone guy doing this that made this game, and he's getting rewarded for it. It's a wonderful game. If you haven't picked it up yet, don't let the price of it scare you. Please don't let that be a factor into it. Just pick it up, play it, and go from there.
If the price of it scares you, you have other issues.
I would imagine so, because you've already spent how much money on a console?
If it scares you, there are other issues there. Just buy it.
And it's still a wall for people to get over. It is. I would say why, but for them it is. And for me it was. I was going to wait until I read the thread to see how people liked it. I wanted to play the demo, but all it
you
took...
You bought Army of Two at retail. Sight unseen, without having rented it.
And I took it back, though, before I opened it.
You bought Army of Two at retail.
But then I bought Rainbow Six Vegas after I returned it.
Yeah, I'm just saying. We're not talking about $15. We're talking about $5. Because it's the difference here that's become part of the conversation. And it's just... Yeah, I'm sorry, you know, for whatever reason, somebody, like, made a break for the fence and was a little bit different as far as this stuff is concerned. But it's $5. It's not even... It's a footnote.
Yeah.
You know, make the decision to buy it or not. But it's just a few dollars, and it's not that big a deal.
Cool.
Like, it's not something we should go on about.
Well, we'll be back 6 minutes after the hour. Talk to Mo Fwacky from the cross-country super trip of PAX 2008. We'll be talking with him coming up in the next hour. More of Evil Avatar Radio next. And welcome back to Evil Avatar Radio here on 1170 WACV. I promise it's not going to be all the that music for most of the night here. It's beautiful, beautiful music that's in the game. So again, check out Braid. It was wonderful to have Jonathan Blow on the show earlier.
All Magnatune artists. That's where all that music is licensed.
Is that what
from.
It is?
Yes.
Okay.
They're all Magnatune artists. Magnatune.com. And you can purchase all those tracks or albums, listen to them in their entirety before you put down your money. Very good independent artist arrangement.
Yeah, good
and
stuff.
Yeah, 50% of the sales go directly to the artist.
So. Oh, good. Very good. Very good news there. So check that out if you'd like to. Anyway, coming up next on the show here from the Penny Arcade Forums, PAX 2008, he is the coordinator of the cross-country super trip. He's got a lot of planning to go. He specifically wanted a intro song, so here it is. We'll intro him. Got a million miles to travel. I got 1,030 towns to go through. Highway to dirt roads to gravel. Spend 100 hungry hours to get back to you. I'm on highway forever. I'll reach my destination never. Get back to you. No. Let's go now. On the phone right now, we've got Mo Fwacky, coordinator of the Cross Country Super Trip. Hey, Mo, you there?
Yep, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I don't think you could hear the intro there because you were on the phone, but...
No, I could hear it just fine.
Oh, okay, good, good, good. That's exactly what you wanted, and we aim to please, especially when we have the PAX folks on. So, all right, so where are you headed from? Where is your starting location? Where are you calling from?
I am just west of Cleveland, Ohio, in Lakewood, Ohio, which is actually the most densely populated city between New York and Chicago.
You've got a long way to go.
Oh yeah, it's about 2 days travel, 40 hours of driving, 52 to 55 actually out there. I think the actual calculations is we spend about 75% of the time on the road.
Yeah, it's quite a long trip that you've got planned out, and this is this your third year doing it?
Yep, third
year doing it. Now the question has to be asked concerning 2010.
Oh, yeah, heart attack. Hold on, let me recover from my heart attack here.
See, the question on this is, it's on the East Coast. So right. So far, all you've been doing is driving East Coast to West Coast. Is this a point when you fly to the West Coast and then drive back home?
Well, it's interesting that they chose the year 2010 because that's the year I graduate and hope to move to that coast. And depending on the timing, I may be at one or the other or something weird going on. But, yeah, it all depends on timing. But either way, I at least plan on coordinating both. I've got a few people out there who are already volunteering to go, so I don't have any problem getting people from there to here as far as wanting to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got plenty of warning, so they can start getting prepared now.
Yeah. But we all have got plenty of warning to start saving the money if we're going to do two of these. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Oh God!
start saving the time off. Of course, you got to take. You've got a job, right? You've got a job outside all this, and you've got to take.
Well, yeah. Well, what's great is I work on campus, and I get a lot of flexibility. Actually, now in past years, the way PAX has fallen, I've only actually had to take 2 days or so off of work. This year is a little different because of Labor Day and all that. Classes start a week earlier, so I basically scheduled a. Really easy semester, and my job, like I said, they're really flexible, so they're giving me 5 days off there. Plus, one of the classes I have is a special topics class completely about video games. So he sees it as a benefit that I'm going to PAX instead of sitting in class. So it works out in my benefit.
Well, that's good then. How did you, Sandman has asked the question of what inspired you to become the Moses of gamers. How did this fall upon you to coordinate such an effort?
Well, I guess, it all started really, a little bit, the backstory starts in 2005 when my friend Jerry and I flew to PAX. And we liked PAX. We didn't like flying at all. Neither did we like the whole night we spent at SeaTac. But that's a longer story. So we had vowed that we were going to drive out for 2006. And I'd actually just gotten a car, not nearly new, but in condition to take across the country, that actually my parents had to pick up for me because it was available PAX weekend. So the next, you know, the next year rolls around, you know, early, and other people are talking about one of the enforcers had tried to coordinate something, but he was already West Coast, and kind of hard to get people to jump onto something if they don't know somebody's already going.
Right.
So somebody else brought it up, and then somebody else was trying to shoot their idea down with really bogus math figures. You know, it's going to cost this much for this, and I jump in because I had driven to California back in 2005, like months before PAX, and I was like, no, this is wrong. These are all the real figures, and I've done this before, and I'm going to drive to PAX with or without you. And I think that kind of got people a little more interested, and we rolled into Seattle with six cars that year. Well, Bellevue with six cars that year, and then we did it again last year, and we came in with 11 cars. And this year we're looking at 14 with about 45 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long does it take to organize something like this? Obviously, how long did it take you the first year you did this?
The first year, I think we got kicking either February. I think it was February. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was around February is when things, people started becoming interested, so I started throwing things together. These days, I start in January. Actually, if you check the cross-country super trip thread on the PAX forum, I open that thread on January 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So, but our actual planning stages start usually on the road. As we go through things, we kind of make mental notes on what we liked and what we didn't like about this, and we make adjustments for the next year, and we talk about it after we arrive, while it's still fresh. And then, you know, when we're in our planning phases, we start to remember that stuff again and all that.
How long is the drive on the final leg? How long is the drive from where you guys start on the last day of driving? How long is that?
The last day.
In other words, from wherever that checkpoint is, you guys get up that morning, and your destination, your final destination that day, is.
Well, we don't really get up in the morning because we're on the road consistently. The last time I sleep will be here in my apartment until I get to Seattle. Like as far as in a bed. Obviously, we sleep in the car,
right.
But we rotate drivers. So I mean, our waypoints are about 250 to 300 miles apart. Some are a little shorter. And those are positioned because basically no car on this trip is doing less than 300 miles on a tank of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So we can be sure that everybody has time to gas up. That was something we learned from the first year. The first year, we placed the points that we were meeting people, and we kind of, you know, winged it as far as getting gas. But then we would get calls from people, and they would be like, we're running low on gas, and so we'd have to stop gas, get gas, and it was kind of a flawed system. So I you know, tighten that up a little bit. And as far as people always ask about bathroom stops, well, 300 miles, we're talking 6 hours max. I mean, and we're not going 60 miles an hour the whole way. So, you know, about 6 hours. So we stop about halfway, usually, for just a quick bathroom stop. And that seems to work for most people. And that's not necessarily scheduled. That's just kind of an agreed-upon thing. Also, our communication's a lot better than it was in 2006.
Oh, yeah. I guess it improves each year. What's the biggest improvement from last year going into this year?
I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot to improve on from last year. We're working on the cross-country. Last year, we called it the Cross-Country Land Project. Now we call it the Cross-Country Land Party because now it's no longer a project. It's a thing. And that's our wireless LAN between cars, and that helps with added communication. Again, any secondary communication systems we can have going are a benefit.
Right.
The more I stress this more than anything, communications between cars is the most important thing on the road. We have actually one of our cars is now designated our weather checking car. The meteorologist, or at least you know the person checking the meteorologist online, because he has a cellular, you know, thing, card to tie to his, well, the phone with the Wi-Fi and tethering
oh, yeah,
and all,
yeah.
All the stuff that I don't have. But I've designated him the weather guy, because last year it was nice. We had internet in Wisconsin at our stop there, just outside of Madison, and I just popped on to the Weather Channel's website and checked the radar map, and I saw this huge storm coming at us right along the highway. And I'm like, oh, gee. And I'm watching it, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, the sooner we leave, the less of a hassle that storm is going to be to us. And we had maybe 20 to 30 minutes left before we left that stop. But I went around to everybody, and I told them what was up. And everybody was more or less ready to go, so we got up and we left a little early, and I think we drove about 100 miles, and I think at least 60 or 70 of that was through that storm.
Mm.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Break the monotony, I guess.
Right, but it's nice to at least we knew that was coming instead of we just left and drove right into that thing. It was a lot better having that forewarning and knowing to leave early. So I want to have that actually on the road this year. But then, like I said, the cross-country LAN party, which now we have four access points. We just had one car broadcasting last year, and we actually grew too big for it too fast.
Right.
So this year we're going to have several access points. I think we have four. have four this year. So a couple of us, one of them actually, this year we have a car from my own city, and they're one of the access points, and I'm one of the access points. So we're going to probably do some road testing here in the next couple of weeks, just to see what kind of range we're looking at.
Oh, that's always good. Is there anything? Is there any way people can identify the line of cars? That would designate, you know, oh, those are the guys going to PAX. If for whatever reason you guys may be passing through somebody's town, yeah. Is there any way they can identify you, find out, oh, that's them?
Well, what we're trying to get going, and I haven't had verification from everybody on this, is at least to have a window flag on the cars, so that even if they're not matching, you at least see a line of cars and they all have window flags in the right. same window, and you kind of, it clicks in your head. And then we're still... I'm unsure if we're going to have CCST flags this year, but I do know that we're just, it's actually cheaper to buy a window flag and rip the flag off it and put another one on it mm-hmm. than it is to buy the window flag brackets by themselves.
anyway, to cut on cost is a good thing. Johnny Nero in the chat room wants you to talk about the DVD.
Oh, yes, the PAX DVD. I guess the cat's out of the bag. It's been out of the bag on the forums for a little bit. But this year they want to include footage, not just from the cross-country super trip, but from all of the super trips, the Canadian super trip and the West Coast train trip,
right.
which is ballooned. They're like, well, probably over 130 people by now on this train. So they're going to have a blast going up the West Coast. I know it. But they want to include footage from actual, like, those events and kind of make the DVD include more about the community and the kind of things that the community does. So they're going to use some of our footage, and they're going to be there to videotape it as we roll in the underground entrance to the convention center, because that's pretty much the only place in downtown Seattle we can actually stop the cars.
Well, it's a long trip, and I've always said that if I could take the time off work, which yeah. I can't, I can take yeah. the time off to do what I got to do with PAX, but to
right.
be involved in that super trip, I would love to do that. It's like I think it would be a lot of fun.
We have people now from a lot wider range than we have in previous years. In previous years, it's been more or less people out of the northeasternly part of the United States. This year we actually have cars coming from Texas and Louisiana driving straight up north to meet us in Fargo.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's probably where, I don't know where I would meet you guys at. We're in Alabama.
Yeah, well, we have, that would be, in the long run, and it would just depend if you wanted to meet the guys in Louisiana or meeting the guys in Texas in Dallas. So you could do that and then shoot up with those guys or whatnot. I mean, it changes every year, though. We don't always have a guaranteed person coming from a certain state, except for, me and Michigan. Those people from Michigan turn out in droves every year. I don't know what it is. Something in the water over there.
Big Red in the chat room says, ask Mo about upside-down mortars. So I'm going to ask you about that. What is upside-down mortars?
All right. For the 4th of July, some of the enforcers flew me out to Seattle to party with them on the 4th of July. And we were in Auburn, which is, I don't know which, I think it's south of Seattle. But, I think we had something like close to 100 mortars. I remember 65 at one count, but I don't know if somebody had brought more after that or not. But, so at one point they started setting mortars off upside down in the tube and in this bucket, which was duct taped together three times from the damage that was done to it by various explosives. It was actually just split by bottle rockets being set off underwater in the bucket and duct taped back together, and then just heavier explosives stuck into it, and eventually was destroyed after it was designated bucket 3.0.
I would think it would be, yeah.
Upside down mortars. There's some pictures of those on Flickr. If you just type in 4th of July and enforcers on the Flickr search, you'll find some of those. It'll be interesting.
Well, outside of the super trip, what are you looking forward to most at PAX this year?
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. Hanging out.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably one of the biggest things. It's not the games that are... I mean, it's all a part... It's everything. It's a little bit of everything that goes into it. But at the top of the list, it's getting to hang out again with everybody that you met last time at PAX.
Yeah, exactly. It's all these people that I talk to online all year round. I mean, we have our IRC channel, which is a little more active than the actual PAX forum, throughout like the winter, and you know, when PAX is still in its early planning stages, we still talk to each other and play games with each other and this and that. We had an ongoing Civilization IV pit boss game that was like one turn per day. And I think eventually the monotony just got to us all trying to log in to take our one turn a day, which just finally we're just like, oh man, I don't know how much longer we can just keep this up. But it was fun for the first little bit.
Well, what is, you know, going, okay, yeah, getting together with everybody is great, yeah. And everything there as well. But all, it's gaming centric. What games have you been playing lately?
Oh, I wrote a list.
Have you played Braid?
I have not played Braid.
Get on it.
I'll have to. hopefully it'll be on one of the console free play machines at PAX, and I'll jump on it there. Okay, Worms Open Warfare 2 for DS. I've been playing that as much as I can when I'm just not when I'm away from home. Actually, a friend of mine and I came up with a couple good rule set schemes. One of them being Ninja, which requires a lot of close combat Worms battle. We've been playing. It's called Fantastic Contraption. It's a physics game online that some of us in IRC have been messing with. That's a little fun, but a little frustrating because I'm pretty bad at physics. And Pandemic 2, which has fueled our undying hatred for Madagascar.
Okay, I don't really understand that, but yeah.
It's this game where you kind of create and evolve an illness which spreads and infects, you know, the world. And the whole thing is different countries, based on the level of infection and how visible it is and this and that, will close their borders to prevent the infection from getting in. And Madagascar has a single seaport. It has no land borders. It doesn't have an airport, at least in the game. I'm sure in real life it probably has an airport. But it has, you know, one seaport, and they close it as soon as somebody on the other side of the world sneezes. So it's impossible to... it's next to impossible, because I know people have done it, but it's next to impossible to actually win the whole game without infecting Madagascar, and Madagascar is next to impossible to infect. So I have learned to hate Madagascar pretty seriously because of that game.
Well, it's great to have you on again. Again, we're celebrating PAX all month long. We had, of course, we had Kristen on last week. You're on this week. We had Jonathan Colton next week, and of course Ku will be on the week of PAX, which of course will be bombarded with what about PAX in 2010? That's the questions that we're probably going to throw in at him. So it's a lot of fun. We look forward to it, and can't wait to see you out there. On what is your arrival, what's your arrival estimate?
Thursday 2 p.m. local time. It's the underground entrance to the convention center. It's where the charter buses park. I don't really know how to get there from inside the convention center, but I know it's somewhere downstairs from the first floor, so cool. Somebody can probably direct you there if you want to be there when we get there,
or
if anybody
great.
Else does.
It'll be
a sight to behold. Just
I just want to see the cars, yeah.
Yeah, just hold your nose when we get out. trust me, it's a little rank.
Is it really that bad?
Oh, 2 days baking in the car. I dread going back down in the car for something I left in the car throughout the weekend because the smell lingers in the car.
How much fun, before we let you go, how much fun is the drive back? Like, getting there is always the fun part, but what about the drive back?
The drive back is a little faster because while some people do stick together, not everybody does, but we move a little faster. We don't wait an hour. We wait as much as we feel like waiting, and we go. At least my car, we always stop at a certain comic book store in North Bend, Washington. Mm-hmm. It's just become tradition because we did it by accident the first year, and it's still fun. I enjoy driving. It's one of my great pleasures. So I guess it depends on the person and how tired they are. But that's what energy drinks were made for.
Exactly. I'm sure there'll be plenty of cans of those inside the cars.
Oh, yeah, no cans this year. I bought enough stuff to make my own energy drinks.
Oh, really? What are you putting in there?
Some herbal supplements that I can't pronounce. guarana and aloe vera. And I've already tested it out. It
aloe vera?
Well. Yeah, aloe vera. I don't know. Somebody on the forums had posted this recipe he used for energy drinks, and I looked it up, and you can drink aloe vera. So I got a jug. I mean, it's only a little bit per. It's not like, you know, the main ingredient or anything. I mean, you just mix it with some water or whatever you're drinking, and, you know. It tastes okay. It's not great, but it doesn't taste any worse than anything else you buy.
Well, you enjoy your aloe vera concoction there, buddy.
I will.
Thanks so much for being on the show with us tonight, and I can't wait to see you at PAX. And have a safe trip. Everybody doing this, please have a safe trip.
Always.
And we will see you at PAX.
Sure thing. I'll track you down.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Mo Fwacky, coordinator of the PAX Cross Country Super Trip for this year. And if you want more information on that, just head on over to the PAX forums, and there's a thread there. There's also a thread over at the PAX forums for Evil Avatar as well, in the Ask Mo Fwacky thread, where you can go and check out all the details you need to know if you'd like to hook up with these guys and head into PAX through the Super Trip method. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up the rest of the show here, go over what little news we can fit into 30 minutes, probably talk more about Braid as well. And it's all coming up next here on 1170 WACV with Evil Avatar Radio. Radio here on 1170 WACV. More music from Braid there, which again, there's just all sorts of great things about this game. Definitely, definitely try out that demo. At the very, very least, please play the demo to see if you like stuff like that. Some people aren't big on puzzlers. Some people just aren't, you know.
I was.
They don't
was
like that style.
Talking to the booth chicks a minute ago about that. Discussing the nature of puzzle games. I personally do not like puzzle games.
Mm-hmm.
I almost always find them to be completely arbitrary. And it's just like, well, you know, like, solve this completely inane, you know, thing by rearranging objects to destroy the evil space overlord. When I should really just use, like, a plasma cannon or something.
You should shoot him in the face.
Yeah. I don't really like that. I've always liked adventure games because I like adventure. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the stories. You know, but it's not something that I'm interested in. I sort of like platformers, you know, I'm sort of here, there, wherever on them. But it's worth noting that this is not really a platforming game with puzzles or a puzzle game with platforms. That the platforming and puzzling aspects of this game are indistinguishable. They are not separate aspects of this game that have even been melded together. They are the same thing. Like, it would be impossible to remove one from the other. Your movement, your positioning, your position relative in the space of any particular environment. This is all so tied to the puzzle that it doesn't actually feel like a puzzle game.
Right.
You know, strange environmental quandaries. That's really, really cool and everything. It's got the potential for amazingly broad appeal. The only thing that I think could really detract from the gameplay at all is that it requires, in some circumstances, not pixel perfect, but certainly very, very accurate platforming skills.
The best, like, part about that, though,
you
is
got to hit this thing on this jump.
And, but if you miss it, you hit the X button, you rewind.
No, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good. That does not completely reduce frustration
problem, no.
to zero.
No, it doesn't.
Because it doesn't make you any better at hitting the jump in the first place.
Again, so this is where I wish we could talk about the game without having to worry about spoilers. Because I would ask you right now, what was your most difficult so far puzzle that you've come into? I'd ask everybody who's played that, but I don't want to ruin anything for anyone.
I will say that I've had very little trouble.
So I've noticed
with this game, like my puzzle
pieces.
I'll see
him finish the world and then finish puzzle complete.
Yeah,
and then he won't go on.
I haven't played it very much. I've only played it for about 3 hours total. maybe four, I don't know, something like that. It's good.
Dana off.
No, I know, but it's good for me. Like the way that you think, like this sort of like very fluid, very relaxed, not even out of the box, but like, you know, just this very like open way of experiencing things works really well for me in these environments. So this is like one of the only puzzle games I'll ever be good at, because if it's arbitrarily just a puzzle put in front of me, I'm like a moron. I'm a complete, you know, whatever. I'm brain dead. I can't deal with it. So yeah, it's all about the context.
Plenty of frustration with it, but for whatever reason, the frustration hasn't, you know, it's not the Dammit Slam frustration. It's not a frustration of, I don't want to play this anymore. I don't ever want to touch it. It's always a frustration of, you know, it may be making me angry, but
it's a recursive, like, inverse kind of frustration. There's never a point when you face frustration, at least not in my experience. And talking to, like, very angry person here. Like, I get angry at stuff in games, and I'm very quick to point out that this is someone else's fault. But, like, in this game, it's always, like, very, very clear to me. This is my inability to let go of what I think the answer should be. The answer's right here. It's very clear. Here's my dude. Here's the thing I need, and here's the way I get there. Why won't the game let me do it that way? And you're just thinking about it wrong. And it's presented in such a way that I'm always aware that the shortcoming is mine. Mm-hmm. It's not a design flaw. You know, it's a user error. So
yeah, I can't wait for.
I mean, certainly not going to be for everybody, but I mean, it's a very striking example of dense, efficient use of gameplay time. It's just. It's very, very condensed, beautiful, like the strunk and white elements of style of gameplay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
In the same way that every word should tell, this game, like, every step, every movement, every element of the gameplay tells.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like it for that very much. And it was only $7.50 for me because Dana bought it on our game. There you go.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That price, it's double the value.
I'm really looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it. Yeah. A great deal.
Of course, I've been playing Sam and Max, which they sent
season two.
A copy of season two. Yeah. I've only finished episode one.
Did you play season one?
I did not play season one. I was a little worried about.
I thought that you were going to do that before you played two.
Well, maybe. I had every intention of doing that until they sent us a review copy.
So you just leapt right into season two.
I kind of felt like, well, if they're going to send us this, I need to play this. You know.
Yeah.
So I was.
Well,
the
reason
about
we offered it to you because you had mentioned after playing. What was it you played? Where it's like, oh, I'm really getting back into.
Yeah, it was the Penny Arcade game.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Penny Arcade Adventures. Yeah.
And I tried the original Sam and Max from way back when. And I found it very unplayable.
Yeah.
It came from a time when the puzzles didn't really make a whole lot of sense, I thought.
Yeah.
And I had to look at a guide to find out how to get past this one point, and I thought, you know, there's no way I would have ever thought to do that particular thing, and that's when I put it down. But I figured things had changed a lot. So I've really enjoyed episode one. The first thing is, When it first starts, there are a lot of things that it mentions that apparently happened in season one, but once they get all that out of the way, I feel pretty good. It's all about the story going on in season two now.
So you're not, like,
I'm not
fighting any continuity errors
caused by
the inability to play them.
They, you know, started a new, fresh story.
That's cool.
That's cool.
And a lot of times, you know, if it's a quality thing, like be it a TV show or a book series or games or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you can maintain the continuity. Like you can still have a march from beginning to end, like an ordered sequence and everything. But if it's good, if the quality is really there, you should be able to jump in midstream and be a little bit out of your depth,
mm-hmm.
but recognize the quality and then just jump back to the beginning. Like it's its own special reward to find like a show you like. You know, speaking a little out of genre, but like when I first started watching Stargate, the TV series, I didn't start until like way down in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point it was just like, oh, this actually is kind of interesting. Yeah. It looked totally stupid, but this is interesting. And then
it was a little
you go back and start over.
It was a little disorienting in the beginning because they threw a bunch of stuff at me real quick that was apparently from season one. But what I realized later they had done was give me context for certain things I was going to find later in the game from season one, like Max is president of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, kind of need to know that, so they throw that in there right there in the beginning. You know, in their dialogue. But and you start off episode one fighting a you encounter a giant robot intent on destroying your office, who has a penchant for bad 80s and 90s song quotes. And he sings them in a very robot-like, you know.
I was going to say, is the humor still intact? Which
it is. There were several laugh-out-loud moments for me just in episode one of season two. And, of course, there's plenty of jokes that I kind of roll my eyes at, but they still make me smile. You know, that kind of humor. The humor I really appreciate. So I can't wait to get into episode two. The interface has been simplified a lot from what I remember adventure games as being. You know, you had a... They evolved up from the text-based stuff. Look at this. Talk to this. Walk over here. So when they first got graphic user interfaces, you had different buttons with eyeball or a walk icon. But now everything's just single click.
Mm-hmm.
You want to pick something up, you click it. You want to talk to a guy, you click him. You want to walk over there, you click that spot on the floor. There's no changing your mouse pointer to something else. But there's still enough to do that it's not overly simplified. So that, I was pretty impressed by that, too. It seemed like there was something else.
There was a lot on that DVD.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't looked at any of the special stuff yet. Because I noticed that every time I pop it into my DVD player, it wants to play a movie that they included as an extra. I'm like, I don't want to watch that yet.
Yeah, I'm the same way with all its special features. I wait until
you know what
the
movie
is.
You don't know if it's going to ruin anything.
Right. I don't know. Maybe it'll ruin stuff from season one that I might not.
Yeah, see, and it may be good. Maybe it's a recap. Maybe that's what
or
it
maybe
is.
It is. I'm be like, yeah.
They need more description. That's really surprising to me that they're just not like, hey, this is.
Well, I imagine if I were running it on a Windows machine, it would probably come up with a menu and tell me a little bit more about what it is. But as it is, it just auto plays since I'm running Linux.
Yeah, because he's got it on the PC. He just didn't have it on Windows.
Yes.
That's exactly the point he's trying to make. So I'm guessing you're going to be playing that this weekend.
I'm really curious about Braid. Of course, this weekend I think will be fairly free, so I may have time to do both. So, but I really want to give Braid a try. But I am by far from done with Sam and Max. I'm completely drawn in and going to do some more of that.
Cool. Daniel, what are you going to be doing this weekend?
Let's see. I think probably Friday. I'll probably pick up Braid when I get the moolahs in the banks. Until then, man, it's really hard to say. I'm going to play some more Depths of Peril, definitely. I'm going to play...
More Dwarf Fortress.
whatever strikes my fancy is what I'm going to play. I've had a really good time, like, browsing around the interwebs looking at, like, indie games, and it's been really interesting. And there's some really good stuff out there. So I don't know. If one of those strikes me as worth downloading, then I'll probably pick that up, too.
Dennis?
The thing I was forgetting to say about Sam and Max was that all of the puzzles made sense if you thought about them enough. They might not be apparent at the beginning, but once you thought about them enough, you could work your way through them all.
I'd almost say that a Braid. All those puzzles make sense, but you really... For some. For others, it seems to come quite easily, but for some, you really have to think about them. Dennis, what are you going to be doing this weekend?
I'll be playing some more Lost Odyssey, probably pick up Braid as well.
Good. I always see people jumping on the Braid train.
This weekend?
Jumping on the Braid train!
This weekend.
They're different things.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. What are you going to be playing between now and the next time we're here next Monday? That's my question. You girls in the booth?
Well, hopefully I'll have some time since I'm doing like marathon work at the moment, but I have something to admit that's a little embarrassing. I have never played an Xbox 3 game before. An Xbox game before. See, I just
Neither
made myself look stupid. And it's something I've been trying to get myself to do, but I'm a little scared of the controller, not going to lie. So I think I'm going to try and pick up a little Viva Pinata or something to get myself used to the controls so that I can play Braid when Daniel buys it. But there's going to be a little fight, I think, for the Xbox when that happens, since both the Xbox and computer are in the same room, and we don't want to ruin Braid for each other.
Oh, no, you really don't.
So we'll see how that works out.
Dana?
Well, move the computer to a different room. That solves that.
He doesn't want it in the other room.
Well, just do it. Don't ask. But
kinda. Yeah.
I will hopefully finish Braid with no outside help, unlike some other people I know. And
well, those people suck.
Then I will
shut up.
I'm just saying.
Then I will play some Bad Company because I haven't played it since they expanded.
Oh, that's right. They had the update or whatever.
Yep.
All right, James, on to you.
What do you want to know?
What are you going to be playing between now and the next Monday?
Man, I got no idea.
Well, I got a guess.
I'm going to predict.
I'm going to guess. World of Warcraft.
Yeah?
That's
what you think
guess.
You fancy or something?
I think I'm just going with, you know.
No, I'm
going
to play that. I play lots of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that will be in there. That's what I'm
That's going to be the primary part of what I play. I'm trying to level up my last character. And, you know, before Warhammer comes out. Because that's going to take some of my attention.
Yeah, man, I want to play that. You know, I forgot to mention, sorry to interrupt you, but you didn't seem like you were going to say anything anyway. So I'm not sorry. Jerk. I played Red Alert 3. The Red Alert 3 beta.
Yeah?
I played that this week. It was very Red Alert. Like, it very much was Red Alert. And I was very happy with that. I was like, you know what, this is okay. It's only a multiplayer beta, which is kind of funky. There were a lot of lag issues that, like, pretty much everybody I was playing with seemed to all have. Like, I thought it was a me issue at first, but it seemed to be a pretty continuous thing. People had connection problems, so that wasn't good. And then, of course, like, in it's all unranked games, and so there's no skill level or anything set. So, you know, half the time you end up with, like, super uber RTS god. And it's just like, 2 minutes into everything, and all my stuff blown up. Like, I literally died within a minute and a half one game, and I don't even know how the guy did it. Like, all of a sudden there was just like a massive army in my base, and I was like, bleh, I'm dead. And I was like,
Yeah.
So, you know. But, I mean, it's fun. The single player will be good. I won't really want to spend that time online, because I don't like playing RTS games online with people I don't know. The skill disparity is just too great. But, it'll be fun. Fun single player game.
Cool. Plan on I got back into playing the Bourne Identity or the Bourne Conspiracy, whichever one
conspiracy.
It is.
Conspiracy,
yeah, Bourne Conspiracy. And so I want to go back and finish that up. Of course, I got Army of Two, but if anybody wants to play Army of Two, that's fine. If anybody wants to play some Burnout Paradise, I'd really like to do that. I downloaded the update, but nobody was online to play with, so we gotta work out some, because that's basically this update is more online than it is anything else. Adding those online modes, so I got to find some people to play with online, and go through that. Definitely want to try and do that sometime this weekend, and get that done. Every now and again, even though I finished it, I find myself jumping back into Braid just to look around, just to kind of go through other parts of it, and for whatever reason, it still kind of pulls me in at times to go back and play that. I have no interest in the speed runs or anything past what I've already done. I really don't have any interest in doing any of that, but for some reason I still jump in there and I'll run through a level real quick and just play it. So, plan on doing that. I'm going through Uncharted again, getting all the trophies, doing that. Pixel Junk Eden's taking up much of my time as well, so lots of stuff. Yeah, it's very relaxing. It's like one of those games I play before I go to bed. Maybe I've just gotten done playing a lot of Burnout or something like that, where I'm kind of wired.
It's your nightcap game.
It really is. It really is. It's just a relaxing jump in, jump out type of thing.
I've never been able to do that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, when I play games, like, I stay up as late as I can. Like, I drink coffee. Until I'm as intense as I can be until I hit the wall. You know?
There, yeah.
Until
I, yeah. Oh, man.
Until my nerves are jangled top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't.
It's really hard for me to.
There's something very jarring in like dropping out of like hardcore air quotes gameplay down into something sort of chill, you know, like the warm milk of gameplay. Like, it's very difficult for me just because like I'm really strung out, you know. So I just go until I'm absolutely done, until it's just not possible for me to even think about anything. And that's usually like that's not very good for me because I start having dreams about, you know, talent trees and instance runs. And I really do. Like, that stuff works its way into your head. And it becomes the background of, like, what your brain does while you're asleep. And that's not very healthy. But Like, it's what I do, so.
It happened to me with Geometry Wars.
It must be awfully nice to be able to
relax
into something with only two dimensions and fewer demands on your concentration.
Saturday, since I don't work on weekends, like, I didn't have to wake up Sunday. Between having, like, searching the internet for, like, indie games, reading forums, playing the brand new version that just came out of Dwarf Fortress, and then in the other corner of the screen I had, like, I was flipping through Olympic events, like, watching that. It was one of those moments where all of a sudden it was like, my body just went, it's sleep time.
Yeah.
It's sleep time now. Like, now. Seriously, get up. And then, well, you know, I had to go to bed because it was, like, 5 in the morning.
I love 5 in the morning.
God, man, it was I haven't done that in like, way too long. Oh, I realized, man, it felt so good.
I'm a huge fan of 5 in the morning.
Like, you don't have to fall asleep. Because when you get to that bed, you're gone.
It's true. I'm not really a fan of early, like, I'm not a fan of, like, the popular AM. Between 6 and, like, noon, 6 and 1. And I'm not really a fan of that time of day. I don't like the things that other people are doing. Other people like to get up in your junk during that time.
That's true.
Like, that's the time when you're going to work and everybody else is going to work. That's the time people like to ring your doorbell or, like, they just get up in your business. I don't like it. I don't want to be a part of the world.
Yeah.
Honest to God, during the hours of, like, 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. Now, like, the wee hours, that's all great.
Because nobody's awake.
Nobody's out there, like, polluting the whole psychological atmosphere of the world. You know, nobody's out there, like, with their angry thoughts or anything. I'm the only one with angry thoughts.
I worked a midnight to 7 a.m. shift. It was the best thing ever.
It's really great. It's really great. Graveyard, you know, whether it's at work or at play, like, it's the best time. It really is. Unpolluted. Relatively pure. But 6 a.m. and that sun starts peeking through the window? No thanks.
It's bedtime.
I'm gone.
Yeah. And of course, as always, it's never tomorrow until you've gone to sleep.
Yep.
And woken up. Then it's the next day.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, that is going to do it for this episode. No after show tonight. There's cake, but there is no after show for us tonight. In honor of Sam's birthday, we're going to have some cake here a little bit. What else? We've got Jonathan Colton next week on the show, so make sure you tune in for that. Always a pleasure to have him on, so we'll have him on next week.
There will be an after
show.
There will...
Hold on.
There's this thing called... Sometimes Dana likes to surprise people with cake.
I didn't know there was cake.
And sometimes Scott likes to ruin that.
Well, here's the situation. The universe decided that because I didn't hang up on anybody and ruin that, they thought I would ruin, apparently, her birthday
cake.
Surprise.
Thanks,
Wish. Don't tell Scott secrets.
Yeah, we don't.
It's gross cake, though. You're not going to like it. So, there. How about that? All right. That'll wrap things up here. Like I said, Jonathan Colton on the show next week. More news talk next week. You know, tons of other stuff. I'm just basically
there
killing time.
There will be an after show.
Not really an after show. More of the thing.
Part two.
Yeah, like this week, part two.
Yeah,
a little change. A little format change we're making so we can kind of broaden our coverage and give you some more interesting conversation.
Yeah, hey, and the show's not as long for you to listen to.
Yeah. No. So it's still doing a cumulative 3 hours a week, but. We'll be doing 2 hours on Monday, and then we'll be doing a private, you know, just recorded-only session on Thursdays for late-week distribution. Gives us a little bit of time to jump on that that punishing Tuesday news day that happens all the time.
Montgomery. Yeah, so. And not have to wait all the way till Monday. And it gives you something to listen to on the weekend.
It does.
Yep. All right. We'll see you. Goodbye.